This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, March 12th, 2024 edition of InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, and my objective is the same as it always is, and that is to help you become a better investor. And we do that one show at a time, one day at a time, one lesson at a time, and most importantly, one call at a time. Now, the calls aren't all we do here. It's the main part because we want to hear what is on your mind, but we also bring our perspective and data developed with over 20 plus years of investment experience and all the tools that we have that we use on a daily basis to manage client accounts. That's what we use here to help you and make sure that you are on track with your investment goals, your savings goals, etc. Now, before we dig into what our plan is for today, let me remind you that our InvestTalk Market Madness contest is coming up. The first matchups will be a week from today. And the deadline to submit your brackets is actually this Sunday. So if you're going to submit a bracket, you need to do that very soon by heading over to investtalk.com. And what we're doing is we're matching up 64 different companies in a large bracket, matching up them up day to day. We're going to preview each matchup and then see who comes out on top at the end. And whoever has the best bracket is winning $1,000. So to join the fun, it's free to play and test your skills. All you have to do is head over to investtalk.com, download the brackets and fill them out, and then complete them using the link provided. Once again, the deadline is midnight on March 17th. Now be sure to download every episode going forward for updates. Now with that said, let's talk about today's market performance, or we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down some show topics. But as usual, we're going to hit on our first caller question now.
Hi, Justin and Luke. First of all, I wanted to say, hope Steve is doing better. You can keep us updated on him. That'd be great. I wanted to see if you had an analysis on Apple and Google. What's a good price to pick those stocks up? I'm light currently on big tech and hoping to add to my position. Thank you.
Well, on the Steve front, I actually talked to Steve today, and it was definitely the best he's sounded in a while. So he's improving, and some general good news on his health front. Obviously, still on his own ongoing battle, but trending in a positive direction. Let's just say that. Now, for Google, it has fallen from its high around $155 per share, and it found support around the 200-day moving average, right around $130, $132 per share. And now it's backed up. It's bounced up to right around $140 per share. Now, you really have to ask yourself with Google, will AI disrupt their search business? Because that's the vast majority of their profits and their dominant market position, their profit margins being so high, et cetera, is the fact that when it comes to search, they are 90% of the market. And thus, they have huge operating margins, 27%. And will AI and large language models being integrated into so many tools from your smartphone to your operating system, right? Microsoft's doing that with Copilot and Windows, and many pieces of software that kind of run our world are starting to implement these AI tools. And that is the gigantic risk here. And I think that's why it's starting to underperform. Now, from a technical perspective, it hit one support level, but really the next major support level, let me give you a major support level. 110. Yeah, 110. That's where I would maybe think about picking it up. I think it's a reasonable risk versus reward there. But the technicals are weakening too much as of late for me to get in, and I don't like the lack of clarity on their search business in the near term or even the long term. So I would need a substantial discount to its historic valuations, and that only would start around the 110 level. Thanks for the call. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and we have a lot planned. And the main focus point is in regards to cash on the sidelines. Everyone talks about that. Record amounts of cash on the sidelines. That's going to fuel the market higher. Is that true? And how true is it, really? Okay, how true is the, I guess, impact of that? And how will short-term interest rates impact where that money flows? You know, will yields and bond prices impact whether money will stay on the sidelines or will go into equities? Okay, so we're going to look at all of that, as well as a few other topics. One is in regards to China. And China is reasserting they want to grow 5% in GDP this year. And the big question is, from where? How? Can they? We'll talk about that. Also, skiing. The economics of skiing. If you ever bought a ski pass, a lift ticket, over the past, say, 10 years or so, you know that those prices have been continuing to go up and up. So we're going to dig into the economics of skiing and the consolidation within that space. And then lastly, if we have time, we're going to talk about the Panama Canal as well as the Red Sea and the impact that will have on shipping rates and thus inflation. So that's on the docket as well. We're also going to head on your voice bank questions. One is in regards to Modine Manufacturing. MOD is a symbol, and the other is WW International. And of course, your finance and investment questions are a number one. We're going into a short break. On the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity, but please remember you can call anytime and leave your question on the Invest Talk voice bank. If you're listening via our live stream or on AM 1220 radio in the Silicon Valley area, you can call right now at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to or should I sell it.
Their questions are curious.
Hello, I have saved up around $80,000 and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein, Steve Peasley, and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. This is InvestTalk. Please tell your friends and family members that they can download our weekday podcast for free anytime at investtalk.com or iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. And when you download and listen, please be sure to rate our podcasts. Our anytime listener line is open, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a snapback day for many large caps. Large cap growth after two pretty rough days on Friday and Monday had a little bit of snapback today, up about 1.8% there. You had NVIDIA up 7% after a couple of rough days. It's very common. If I look at the chart of NVIDIA, what you'll see is that we're big reversal on Friday and a follow through yesterday, and you had a rally today. But in, as long as Friday's high is not breached on the close, then that reversal day on Friday is still intact. So, and it's very common to see the high end of that range of those type of days to be tested in subsequent days, like you saw today. So it's not shocking. And exactly why I still think NVIDIA is probably topped, but we still need a little more evidence. And obviously that has been holding up the broader market. Because if you look at something like the IWV, the Russell 3000, that one was up only about 1% today, right? Versus large cap growth up nearly 2%. So NVIDIA certainly dragged that higher. Small caps were flat today after outperforming the last couple of days. So that was kind of the weaker part of the market. You had the CPI number that came in a bit hotter than expected. And that did push the 10-year up about 5 basis points, up to 4.15%. Now, I wouldn't say it was a blowout or anything like that, but certainly showed that the inflation impulse that's been with us for the past 24 months is still there to a degree. Now, not nearly as strong as it was a year ago, but still there to a degree. Month over month, you had core CPI of about 0.36%. That was still down from the prior month of 0.39%, but the month over month regular CPI, not the core, that was up 0.44%, an acceleration from up 0.31% in January. And the year-over-year mark actually accelerated from 3.09 to 3.15. So we're still kind of hanging around the 3% mark on CPI. I know a lot of people say, oh, well, inflation's still much hotter than that. Well, that's because most people have longer memories than 1 year. They kind of look at what things have done over the last 2 or 3 years. But in reality, if you're looking at just a year, it's around the 3% range. So I still think CPI is not the best indicator, as well as the Fed doesn't think that either, because they look at PCE. So a little bit too much is put into the CPI reading. It's really not nearly as important as the market tries to act like it is. What would be more important, frankly, is what happens on Thursday, which is the producer price index. Okay, because that is actually a leading indicator to the PCE and to the CPI data, because it's usually a 2 to 3 month lead time, because that's this core of where inflation is coming from, is what are producers doing? Are they raising prices or are they lowering prices? And that eventually feeds through to actual consumer prices in the economy. So the real number to follow is not the CPI this week, is the PPI coming in on Thursday. So we'll see what that looks like. And then next week, we do have the Fed. Next week is Fed week. And a week from tomorrow, we will have another Fed announcement. Now, I promised an answer to the next caller stock pick. So let's play it now.
I'm calling today about Modine Manufacturing, ticker symbol MOD. I called about this stock in the mid-30s because I thought the numbers were good and decided I would wait for a pullback. It's rallied and passed a bunch of pullbacks because I missed it. Currently, it's at all-time highs. It's in the 90s. It's pulled back to the moving average 20-day, I believe. I was wondering if you could take a look at this and let me know if you still think the numbers are good, or maybe I just have FOMO and I can stop looking at the stock. Let me know your thoughts. It would be much appreciated. Thank you very much, guys.
Well, you definitely have FOMO because it is up dramatically, like you said, looking at the mid-30s. Now it's in the mid-80s, 85, after a pullback from a high in the mid-90s, around 95. So the nice thing is it did have a bit of a pullback, a refresher, so it's not overbought anymore. And you had a nice update today, up about 4.5%. And for everyone else out there, Modine provides thermal management solutions to diversified markets and customers. And this is really all about the heat transfer systems that go into EVs. Remember, EVs have a different manufacturing process and supply chain than your average internal combustion engine car. And and that's what the market's starting to kind of figure out. And Modine is in the middle of that. And so I do think it's a bit stretched at this point, but you know, if you're trying to play these trends, then this is the type of name that you want to find a time to own. Now, the big question here, though, is what will happen to the multiples once growth slows down? For example, last quarter, revenue growth was flat year over year. Earnings growth was that big, but revenue growth was flat. First quarter this year, revenue growth is supposed to be down 2%. So what type of multiple are you willing to pay? Probably not this high. I would want this to get back into the low 70s for me to pick up. But I like what you're looking at. I like the space that it's in. And I would be looking for an entry point. But my buy point, once again, would be around $70 per share. Thanks for the call. Now we're heading into a break, and I welcome your finance and investment questions right now. No question is too simple or too complex. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
In today's market, more than ever, you need unbiased investing guidance because it can help you achieve financial freedom. Well, you've come to the right place, InvestTalk. And Justin Klein is here now taking your calls live. So step up with your questions, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today concerns this question. And it is about the historic levels of cash sitting on the sidelines. And a lot of people point to this factor as evidence that the bull market will continue to keep rolling because when especially the Fed cuts rates, the money market, the attractiveness of the money market will go down. Currently, most money markets yielding about 5%, which for most people, they haven't seen that in over a decade. Closer to two decades. And that is, on a nominal basis, a fantastic risk-free yield. And that is why money continues to flow into that area. And it really started in about October of 2022. And since then, there's been about $1.2 trillion shifted into these cash-like vehicles. And as of the end of February, There was $6.1 trillion in money markets. Now, that flow has started to slow in January, and especially February, only $33 billion of net new money. And we're on pace this year to have inflows in money markets of about $1 trillion, which would be short of last year's record. Okay. And the question for most people is, that sounds like a lot, $6.1 trillion. Why shouldn't that be fuel for that next market rally? And the simple answer is yes. But the more complex answer is, kinda. And it really comes down to, in relation to the size of asset prices. And that's what most people get wrong when they're looking at raw numbers. Is they're not comparing it to any other numbers. Almost everything in life is relative. So $6 trillion is a lot, but what is the value of asset prices more broadly? And the simple answer is, compared to long-term asset prices, the amount of money in the sidelines is only at about 23%. Whereas the long-term average since 2011 has been 20%. So it's slightly above that average, but not dramatically above it. The peak in cash levels was in actually 2008, 63%. That was the ratio of cash on the sidelines versus the value of the assets. And just think back then, how many people went to cash, were scared out of their wits, and the value of assets more broadly fell. So the simple answer to all this is, yeah, there's cash on the sidelines, and it's in line with the longer-term average. And the big question you have to ask yourself is, what will the Fed do? What will Fed policy be over the next year or two? Is it dramatic rate cuts? Is it minor rate cuts? Is it major rate cuts? Or maybe rate hikes? Or maybe doing nothing at all for another year plus? Could we get a soft landing with inflation accelerating like you've seen kind of lately a little bit? And that would mean, hey, rates would go higher and money would stay on the sidelines. So that's what's interesting here is that, you know, does the market really want rate cuts? Because that would signal a weak economy, a weak jobs market, and weak economic growth, and thus weak earnings. But a strong economy means rising corporate profits and those yields staying relatively elevated and money staying on the sidelines. But that would be a catalyst for the market to continue to kind of grind higher. And that's kind of what I expect for the next 12 to 18 months is the easy money from the fall of 2022 until today, that's probably behind us. It's been a dramatic rise in the S&P since the fall of 2022 when sentiment was really, really bad. Now sentiment is offside to a degree, but what you're starting to see is a rotation in markets. And that rotation is back towards more cyclical names. Financials doing better. Industrials doing better. Basic materials doing better. That's where money is flowing in. So a lot of what you're going to see before the next liquidity cycle peaks out is likely more of a rotation in markets than some sort of major pullback or breakout to, you know, 6,000 on the S&P. I don't think we get there over the next year or two. But a rotation is likely in the offing, and that money could still stay on the sidelines because of high rates. Now we're heading into a break, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. Ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
On the next InvestTalk, we'll look into this story. Tax-efficient portfolio makeovers may be less painful than you think. Remember that proper accounting of cost basis is essential to avoiding paying more in taxes. That story tomorrow, but for now, let's play another caller question now.
Hey, my name is Margaret. I'm calling from New Jersey. I love your show. I would love to hear your take on WW in 2024. Their new CEO has made drastic changes, but listening to their last two earnings reports, it seems like they are possibly heading in the right direction. I just don't know for sure. So if you could give your advice on that stock, it would be greatly appreciated. Take care.
All right, looking at WW International, and for everyone out there, that is Weight Watchers. They changed their name, I'm not sure how long ago, but they changed their name, at least publicly, to WW International, and they provide weight loss solutions. And I know this company, I don't want to say super well, but I have a family member who is a Weight Watchers, I don't know what they call it, coach, counselor. She runs some of the Weight Watchers meetings. I don't know if she still does it. Been a while since we talked about it, but she was doing it for a long time. She lives out in New York on Long Island, and you know, this is a business that thrived in the early 2000s, did very, very well. Let me zoom out on the chart here, see where this ultimately peaked out. Yeah, peaked out in 2018 around $100 per share. Also peaked out in 2012 around 80, went all the way down to $3, $4 per share, then back up to 100, and now back down to 267. So it's been quite the roller coaster throughout the years. And investors have been on a yo-yo diet when it comes to Weight Watchers stock. The issue here, however, is really their debt. They have a lot of debt, $1.4 billion in debt, negative free cash flow. And frankly, I think this is a business, while as some value, cannot support this level of debt and is likely going bankrupt, the company as a whole. Now, once again, a lot of people think bankruptcy and they go away. And sometimes that happens. Probably not going to be the case here. They'll probably come out as a new entity, as something very different, something with a new capital structure. Still Weight Watchers or WW International, but this is not an investment opportunity in any sense of the word. And frankly, I think in today's world where you can get your nutrition information easily online, there are so many social media gurus, YouTube gurus, etc. You don't necessarily need the Weight Watcher meetings or Weight Watcher products and protocol to lose weight. You know, and there's things like the keto diet, carnivore diets, etc. that a lot of people are adopting and doing very well with. And so I just don't think the Weight Watchers, while it was innovative of it at its time, is no longer very relevant. So I would certainly pass on Weight Watchers, and that looks like it's headed for bankruptcy. Thanks for the call. Now let's talk a little bit about China. And we know China, the second largest economy in the world, certainly an important factor when it comes to global profits. You see that with Tesla and Apple struggling here lately because their market share within China is shrinking. Now, that's the market share, but what about the general growth of the Chinese economy? If that is suffering, every company that is involved in China that derives a large percentage of their business from China is going to suffer. Now, China is refreshing its GDP growth target to 5%. That's after, if you believe the data, that they grew 5.2% last year. But about, even by their numbers, about two-thirds of that was a bounce back in consumer demand after they lifted the zero COVID policy in 2022. So that tailwind is gone. And what's starting to take hold are things that are actually a drag to the overall economy. Number one, local governments deleveraging. We know that there's been a lot of misallocation of capital there. Industrial overcapacity. We know that supply chains are starting to be diversified out of China. And capital outflows. We know people are taking money out of China, not only because of that diversification of supply chains, but also just money flowing out of Chinese stocks. And so far, Beijing has talked a bit about stimulus, but it's been, in the grand scheme of things, pretty minor and not very effective. And I think the reason that it hasn't been is because they don't know what direction to go. And frankly, it doesn't look like China has many great options to spur economic growth. Because the old drivers of the economy were property, infrastructure, and manufacturing. And they all have problems. Home prices are down. Sales keep falling. And there's a massive oversupply of homes in China. By most estimates that I've been reading about, and I believe based on the data, I think home prices, if they were to get back to correct levels in China, would be down about 50% at a minimum. At a minimum. And we know the infrastructure to support a lot of that has gone overboard as well. So spending more money on the infrastructure could mean a lot of building bridges to nowhere. Very inefficient capital expenditure outlays. And then it comes to local governments many of them are in high debt because of this misallocation of capital on infrastructure as well as housing. And there have been officials going to these local municipalities and forcing them to cut projects, especially those that are less than halfway through. And they're focusing more on debt resolution, debt pay down. And obviously, all of this is going to hold back growth in the near term. And since 2020, the credit that's flowing into the property sector has slowed and been redirected towards manufacturing, EVs, solar, for example. The problem with that is that that is starting to slow as well. There's overcapacity in the industrial space. Margins are compressing, and it's actually bringing about deflation, which in a highly indebted economy, that is a big problem. Now, they can't push on manufacturing again because they already have a massive surplus, about 2% of world GDP of a trade surplus. And companies are not trying to expand, mostly, their production in China. And so where do they stimulate? And the simple answer is they don't really have a place. So it's unclear how they fix this problem, especially their demographic situation. How do you create more young people? Takes 18 years to create an 18-year-old, plus 9 months. So while the stock market has rallied, a lot of that has to do with government actually coming in and providing support. The valuations in Chinese stocks is about average with the whole MSCI All World Index ex-US. And so stocks aren't cheap either. And they have much broader issues than most other economies. And so it's pretty clear that the Chinese government is between a rock and a hard place on how to reform their economy in a way that can sustain their debt and manage their way out of this demographic bomb that they are in. Let's go to Sam in San Francisco. Wants to talk about Salesforce CRM.
Yeah, so I'm just wanted to know what's your insight if they now they paying dividends. Do you think it's going to be a good hold for long term? And what do you think about data as data becoming more important in the United States?
Beta? What do you mean by that?
Data.
Data. Got it.
Data.
I mean, Salesforce, the original CRM cloud provider, pretty much. They have huge install base of customers. This is a $300 billion market cap. A very good company. But the question here is, how do you properly price this? And frankly, at 8.5x sales, enterprise value to EBITDA around 30, that's a bit too high for my liking. And I think the signal actually of paying a dividend is somewhat negative, that you know they don't have a lot of growth drivers. In fact, you can see that with their sales growth. The last 4 quarters, sales growth has been 11% each quarter. 2 years ago, that sales growth was in the mid-20s. And so earnings estimates for this year and next year are coming down. And are you going to pay a high 30s multiple or even a low 30s multiple if you based on forward-looking earnings for something with roughly 10% sales and earnings growth? I'm not going to pay that much. I think this needs to come down closer to $200 per share. That's where I would be interested in it, but not now. And I think the signal of the dividend is that they don't have a lot of ways to increase the lever of growth in their business. And when it comes to data, yeah, they do have a lot of data, and I think that's valuable. And they have launched AI tools and things like that. But it's not the end-all be-all. It's about having an addressable market that they can expand their offerings to. And being the early adopter is good in the fact that they were able to become profitable and redeploy that capital into growing their business. But it's pretty clear as of late that that growth is mostly behind them. And so it need to be much cheaper, like I said, closer to $200 per share before I'd buy Salesforce CRM. Now let's keep things moving. Here comes another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, my name is Dave from New York. I have been investing in Yieldmax. I own Coney, and I've done really well with that in the last few months. I have some incredible returns. I'm wondering if you guys invest it all into Yieldmax and try those funds out at all. Look forward to hearing back. I know it's a very risky fund to invest in, but I've done very well. Just want to hear what your thoughts were.
All right, looking at Yieldmax, what he's talking about is Coin, the Yieldmax Coin option income strategy. So this is a covered call simply on Coinbase, C-O-I-N-E, C-O-I-N. That is the symbol. And the symbol of this is C-O-N-Y. And it's done well, but mainly because Coinbase has done well. But what you can see with a covered call strategy is when things do really well, the covered call actually holds you back. Coinbase bottomed in early February, right around, it's called $120 per share. Now we're at $256 per share. Okay, over 100%. Let's take a look at what Coney did over that time period. It also bottomed in early February, right around $18 per share. And now it's around $28 per share. So up nicely, but obviously that selling those calls held the stock back. And I've said this a million times about all of the, trying to pull this up, all of these cover call ETFs or cover call strategies in general. It's about the underlying. You've done well with CONY because Coin did well. If it doesn't do well, you're going to do poorly. Now, you won't catch all of the gains on the upside, and you won't catch all of the losses on the downside. So it will even out the returns a bit more over time. But it's really about the underlying stock. So for example, TSLY, another Yieldmax product, Tesla, that has been in a downtrend pretty much since it started in November of 2022. Why? Because Tesla's been in a downtrend ever since. Now, once again, it's going to be a bit less volatile than its underlying, and that can cut both ways. That can be good when the stock goes down. It can be bad when the stock goes up, or at least hold you back a bit. I am not a fan of these, except for unless you really like the underlying stock and you want someone else to run a cover call strategy on top of that stock. So that's your question. Owning Coinbase itself is very risky. Let's say this, extremely risky. Owning Coney, CNY, the Yieldmax product, is still very risky, but maybe not extremely risky. So it's just a way to lower your risk overall, but the underlying stock is the most important aspect here. Now, let me alert you about the new InvestTalk Classroom episode we just published. It's a little over two months have passed since the SEC approval of the Bitcoin ETFs. And the latest episode of InvestTalk Classroom is posted and ready for you to dive in on the Bitcoin ETF story and its potential effects for the economy and this asset class. Now, join me and Luke as we provide a detailed analysis of what the future might hold. In episode 17, Bitcoin ETF Impact. So search InvestTalk Classroom on YouTube. Be sure to tell your friends as well. And the phone lines are open, waiting for your questions at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my new friends at InvestTalk. I'm Kim Bro, calling from Anchorage, Alaska. Happy and grateful to be a new listener to your podcast. I'm hoping you'll give me your take on Ormat Technologies, ORA. It's a geothermal energy company. I invested in them a couple years ago, and they've just been going down. Perhaps this will spur a longer conversation on renewables, but specifically this geothermal company, I'm happy to hang on to this. I'm a personal hang on to things for years and years just to get them to grow. So curious if you think it'd be better for me to let it go and spend money elsewhere. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Well, happy to have you aboard. Glad to hear from a new listener. And she's looking at Ormat Technologies. And the issue is that this is a name that went public not that long ago. Let me pull back here. Oh, actually, one chart has it only going back to 2022. Another chart has it going back much further. But either way, the stock has been in a downtrend since late 2022. And is that a coincidence that it started going up? Sorry, going down, excuse me, when interest rates started going up. That's about when interest rates started going up, right? Late 2022. Or no, that was 2021. Excuse me. But you can see here is that their business has struggled with higher cost of capital. And the amount of debt this company has on its balance sheet, about $2 billion in long-term debt. That is not dramatically high, but it's a bit worrisome. The times interest earned is only 2.7, which is okay, but it's not amazing. And its free cash flow is negative, $300 million trailing 12 months. And that's been a downtrend really since 2019. It's been negative since really 2017. So I don't like that. I like that it's geothermal, but there's not a whole lot of growth opportunities there because of environmental reasons. And they also have a solar segment as well. So I think you just have better use of your capital here, elsewhere. The chart continues to head lower. Earnings projections for this year and next year continue to be downgraded as well. And I don't like their debt situation. So I think you have better opportunities to redeploy it elsewhere in the energy space. And I would move, frankly, away from the clean energy side, because the higher cost capital just makes these businesses much more difficult to run. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, let's talk a bit about skiing. And it's pretty interesting the way that the U.S. ski market has evolved over the past decade or so, to a point where single day lift tickets cost as much as $250. This is very different than what you see over in Europe. And what's interesting is that it's kind of become a monopoly and a bifurcated market. You have your skiers that go maybe once or twice a season. That would be myself, frankly. I snowboard, but I don't go that often. I haven't gone this winter. I would like to go, but you know, unless you buy either an Epic Pass or an Icon Pass, you're going to pay a lot for these lift tickets. Now, Epic Pass was launched in 2008 by Vail Resorts. And these season passes were generally only for locals. And running a ski resort was good when there was snow and terrible when there was not. And what these passes have done is made the business of running ski resorts much more consistent. And the number of skiers is at an all-time high. Vail now owns 41 resorts. So when you buy those passes, that pass, the Epic Pass, you can have access to all of them. 2018, the Icon Pass was launched by Alterra Mountain Company. And that has also been a big success, consolidating a bunch of different mountains and allowing them to become more profitable. And this is kind of a microcosm of what's happening in the economy more generally. And it's happening with airlines, for example, where you have, if you sign up for the credit cards, and you get airline miles, and you book in advance, then you get cheap prices. But if you are kind of last minute, you do it every once in a while, well, you're going to pay high prices. And so if you opt in to a brand or committing to a particular expense far in advance, you can get good cheap prices. If you don't, there's dynamic pricing and you're going to pay high prices. And that's kind of what the entire economy has become. And so it's pretty interesting to see this happening. And that's been kind of good for the ski industry, but you know, has it been good for the airline industry? I'd probably argue, at least for the customer, definitely not. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another InvestTalk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, tell your friends about the Market Madness Contest. It's free to enter and to participate, and you might win a grand prize of $1,000. So to learn more, head over to investtalk.com. But hurry, you have until March 17th to play. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.